Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSPMAG24.
Welcome to the ITSP Magazine Podcast Network. You're listening to a new episode of the Leadership Student Podcast with MK Palmore. We are all lifelong learners, and nowhere is this more relevant than in the practice of leadership. Our goal is continual learning and improvement. Let's get after it. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Okay, folks, here we go. This is MK Palmore. Welcome to this episode of the Leadership Student Podcast. Today as my guest, I've got Carter Groom, who is the CEO of Hearst Health Advisory. Carter and I met several months ago, introduced by a common friend, and I've been impressed with Carter's journey in corporate America and the industry. They're doing some exciting things at Hearst Health, but as my audience knows, our conversation with Carter today will be about the subject and discipline of leadership. So, Carter, welcome to the Leadership Student Podcast.
MK, thank you so much for having me. Great to see you, and thank you for having me on the podcast.
I'm excited to have you on. I've had the opportunity now to speak to a handful of CEOs, and I find that the CEO perspective is unique and sometimes different as people aspire to become CEOs, or at least many professionals do. And my first question to you right out of the gate is, did you always know that you wanted to be the chief executive officer of a company?
Not at all, MK. Not at all. I always sort of, you know, had, as I reflect, some leadership qualities, captain of the swim team, baseball team, things like that. But I never thought growing up I wanted to be a CEO. I just didn't have that in my life. And as I recall, you didn't really see these superstar CEOs that you see today. It wasn't a position that was so, I guess, celebrated the way it is now. But I never really even thought about that until I started interacting with some CEOs as I became a professional. And those were in my consulting days. But I certainly never thought, gosh, That's what I want to do. That's what I need to do. But it did happen at an early age. And I can tell you, I've been a CEO for nearly 20 years, and I'm still learning every day how to be a good CEO.
Well, that's the good part about being the eternal student. And we're going to hopefully pull back the thread on some of those learnings during this conversation. Take us back then to maybe the first time professionally you were tapped on the shoulder and maybe asked to lead a team. Any trepidation about what that looked like? Had you led before? How was that first experience leading in corporate America?
In a professional setting, it happened from an IT perspective, and most of my experience, in a career perspective, has been through healthcare, and I was tapped to lead a team that actually included a bunch of consultants and seasoned individuals. And I was this young guy. It was a pretty high profile project in a healthcare system that I worked for. And the way that I actually tackled it, MK, was I worked, I'm thinking, 120 hours a week just to make sure that this thing went well. And so the only way I knew how to actually address this and learn and do the things, to minimize risk in the project was to work day and night. And I even slept in, we're in a hospital setting. I slept in hospital beds for weeks at a time before this go live to make it successful. So that was really my first foray into being put into a leadership position. And I enjoyed it, but I also often ask for feedback. Am I doing okay? Because you can imagine, I was in my early 20s at the time, and I was leading individuals that were certainly more experienced and had tenure. And so I sort of secretly worried about that. What are these people that have been here for 15 years think of me? So I wanted them to like me at the same time. So I'd often check in with them to get their feedback and advice. And that ended up helping me tremendously. And I think it endeared my leadership style to them, making them feel a part of the team.
Was there any particular event that represented sort of a light switch on that you recognized that maybe you were getting the majority of the things right, at least, and maybe having the kind of impact that you intended to have?
Yeah, you know, I think after about 4 or 5, you know, big IT go live events, I thought, gosh, you know, I can actually lead and inspire. You know, I don't get everything right myself, but knowing, you know, that I can inspire people and model the way gave me confidence through each one of those larger go live situations, you know, to take on even larger roles. And you know, I think I developed a really sound appreciation, MK, for encouraging associates, you know, and colleagues, you know, to tell me what they were thinking ultimately, but also ensure that I was sharing the success of those projects. So any type of win was because of the team or the individuals, and any challenge or failure that we faced, I took the accountability. And that, I didn't read any books or anything that said do that. It just somehow felt right. And that's, as I grew in terms of the accountability that was given me, it really helped me from a leadership perspective.
That's outstanding. The trust factor, I think, is part of what you're touching on that you develop with teams as you go through this process of building rapport with one another. The difficulty in leading, and I don't care what anyone says, when you're leading folks that are senior to you, at least in tenure, that can be a difficult dynamic to manage. I certainly experienced that throughout my career. What are some of the ways that you've gone about ensuring that you're capable of, one, developing trust with those senior folks, maybe identifying who the influencers are among the senior team, and then subsequently figuring out how best to influence and make sure that you're getting your objectives accomplished, but at the same time, you know, learning to work with those folks?
Yeah, that you know, and it still happens today because you know, I'm always looking up to somebody wherever in whatever situation I'm in, if I'm a part of a board or otherwise. I think first and foremost, MK, is being humble and making those individuals that you're tasked with leading feel like they actually have say in the direction. And I'm listening to them, you know, while I'm inspiring them. And so, you know, that's a big element for me is sort of being humble and being genuine. And I think human beings generally are pretty good judges of character, and they can tell after a while if I am genuine. And once they see that and they feel, you know, ultimately that they have say and essentially they can challenge the process where it's not me saying this is how we do it. That really has helped me in my career. And I'm looking at it through the lens of healthcare, number one, and primarily very large information technology projects, which is different, right? Your background in the military, there's a hierarchy there that, you know, you don't necessarily foster maybe the challenge of leadership, but you know, in this field, I want to foster that ability for people to say, well, what about this? Or what about this? I think this might be a better path. And if they see that I listen to that, it's easy to build that team, to build that rapport, and to build that trust.
Great, great, great example. First time you became a CEO, what were the circumstances there and what was that experience like for you?
Yeah, I was a founder of the company First Health Advisory, but I was not the president or the CEO at the time. I was actually in my early 30s, MK. But I think some of those qualities that we've already talked about, I wanted to continue to develop those qualities. And you know, the the chairman of the company at the time saw those qualities in me and saw the sort of the passion and the hunger that I brought to the team. And so he actually made a change in the organization, about 2 or 3 years into my tenure in the organization. And I got to tell you, there are a couple other leaders in the company that absolutely unequivocally didn't think that was a good move. And I remember fielding phone calls, you're not ready for this, Carter. I don't think you can do it. And, it made me mad, but it also, it energized me and inspired me to be the best leader I could be, knowing that within the team, those individuals are not with the company anymore, but within the team, there were doubts. But I said, I understand your doubts, but give me a chance to prove to you that I can lead this organization. And I did. But knowing that there was people that didn't believe in me, instead of turning that into anger, I turned it into inspiration.
You think that's a common theme? That folks maybe believe that others aren't ready for the task? And in some cases, whether they want to or not, oftentimes that results in people sort of working against the grain or working against the objectives of the person they don't believe is ready for the challenge. Have you seen that commonplace in business, or do you think that's just kind of human nature that you're not always going to have sort of everybody on board as a champion?
Yeah, I mean, look, you have such a diverse group of thought and individuals and background, and you're always going to have someone that doesn't necessarily think, that's the right path. So the challenge is to go back to being genuine, to being humble, and leading from the heart, and get people to believe and get people to be inspired about your vision. And that's really what I work on a lot. I say, guys, I truly believe in this. I want you to believe in this, and I want you to carry this to our other team members and share that same passion. But I'm always, always praising individuals and calling out great work and sharing my appreciation for the work that those people do. And that's served me pretty well, that attitude of showing appreciation, as opposed to, sort of this idea that you have to be a jerk and you have to, just be a really powerful, macho, leader to actually get people to do things for you the way you want them to do it. It's not my style. And I kind of wince when I've seen other people in my career that lead through intimidation and fear. And I don't subscribe to that approach.
Right. What do you do at the CEO level to make sure that you stay connected to, and I hate the phrasing of this, but even the sort of the lowest levels of the organization, entry-level employees, how do you maintain that tissue connectivity so that they understand your high-level vision, the execution plan, and that kind of thing, especially for folks that are maybe joining you guys? You've been on the journey now for a while with First Health Advisory. How do you ensure that the vision, mission, and culture of what you are personally responsible for hits at home at all levels?
Yeah, it is one of the biggest challenges, especially as your organization is growing, where I used to be able to talk to just about everybody in the company and kind of get a sense of, are things going well? How are you feeling? Are you comfortable with where I'm taking the organization with the strategy? I certainly rely on my leadership team now to carry to me, some of those challenges or things they're hearing. But I still make a point every week of talking and calling individuals kind of out of the blue and saying, thank you. Thank you for doing X. Thank you for doing Y. Thank you for going above and beyond the call of duty to please a client or to do something internally. And it's amazing the type of information and feedback I get when I call these individuals. And some of them, we're in cybersecurity, MK. They think I'm somehow, a spoof, or, they're getting some sort of fraudulent call when I call, one of our employees. But I do assure them, and I love those conversations. That's what keeps me grounded. That's what keeps me from just listening to a small group of individual leaders in the company, and ultimately it serves in providing direction and ultimately how we treat our people in the organization.
Not that you need me to double tap on that, but you literally just reminded me of an experience I had as a young manager and leader in the FBI, when out of the blue, I get a call in the middle of the workday from the director of the FBI. The person calling says, "Hold for the director," as I picked up the phone, and it was a 15-second conversation. "I heard you're doing well at this. Thank you. Keep it up." And it's like it rejuvenates you. You get rejuiced, right? The boss just caught you and said, "I recognize what you're doing way back here in Washington, D.C. Keep it up and keep going." It's really powerful. So great to hear that you're doing that.
And it is. I mean, I love it, number one. And I've heard that same type of feedback, MK. That's why I want to do it, is to inspire those people. But sometimes it's kind of goofy. I'm a person, you're a person, and I appreciate what you're doing. That's what it boils down to. And, it's just, yes, we have hierarchy in the organization. Just it makes sense to structure that way. But I don't think of anybody as, well, this is a lower level person, or this is, I've got to treat this person any differently. That is essential to our culture, is everybody is equally valued.
So one of the primary topics for you as a leader of an organization is building leadership underneath of you. Mm-hmm. Let's sort of go down the lane of whether or not one leadership can be taught, and maybe some thoughts you have around how, especially for young leaders, they can learn principles of leadership. Because I think we make assumptions oftentimes that people are ready and that they understand everything. Maybe your experience is different than others. It sounds like you kind of pick some stuff up on the fly, on the move.
Sure.
Can it be taught? And what ways are you ensuring that you're developing leaders in your company now?
I do think it can be taught, MK, but to a certain extent. And you read books and I read books and we go to events and we hear speakers on leadership. But I think the best way to learn, and this is not some secret that only Carter Groom is doing, is to model the way. And if I want my leadership team, to perform at the top of their ability, I need to perform at the top of my ability, and I need to model the way that I talk, the way that I dress, the way that I act in social situations, the way that I, just interact with my family. When they see that, they go, okay, this is a leader that I can follow, because there's integrity there, there's honesty there, and that is so important when you think about it through the lens of doing cybersecurity work, right? We're talking about security, and privacy is one of the most personal sort of relationship type decisions in business. If I'm going to do work with this person and this person's company. And so I try to model the way ultimately for our leaders. And that seems to be the best way that I learned as I came up through the ranks. And I feel like that's the best way that our leadership can learn is just do right by people and do the right thing, and ultimately you'll succeed.
Do you exercise any kind of formal leadership training for your senior leaders in the company? Do you spend time in retreats teaching things like reflection and that kind of thing with leaders, or tackling use cases that might be helpful in getting people get their heads wrapped around sticky issues?
Yeah, absolutely. And all of the above, retreats, when we get together as a leadership team, we talk about the qualities of what makes a good leader. We have lunch and learns where we bring in outside individuals that are not only leaders in cybersecurity, but are leaders in healthcare. And so we sort of, mix all of that up, but that is really essential to all of our growth. And I'm always, probably one of the most attentive individuals in those situations.
Take us back to maybe your youth, or you tell us when the first time you sort of understood that modeling concept that you just described. who modeled good leadership for you, and what were some of the things you picked up from it?
You know, I'll maybe take you back to sort of my earliest career moments. And, you know, there was modeling that I saw that was really good behavior. And there was an equal amount, if not more, MK, of modeling what I learned was not appropriate behavior. And you know, so we're not always learning from, you know, individuals that are doing right by people and are honest and have integrity. But I was paying as close attention to the individuals that I thought were doing the opposite and saying to myself, I'm not going to act that way when I'm in that position. I'm not going to, you know, I can recall a time when I was in a company and there was a corporate, it was an entire company event, and the leaders, you know, to be honest, just had too much to drink. And I thought, you know, they need to be more disciplined than that in front of people that look up to them. And you know, that's an example of what I learned from modeling on the other side, right? So right. I since I've learned as much, perhaps more, of what not to model to become who I am today versus what I saw in modeling really, really behavior that I want to emulate.
So I've told, and I think this is true, other guests that we learn infinitely more from failure than we do successes any day of the week. Is there any one particular experience, and you don't have to give the exacting details, but any one particular experience that stuck with you over the years that really maybe represented a pivot point for you in your understanding of how to lead people?
You know, I recall, and I'll put it in the context of cybersecurity, which is, again, a very stressful field. you live it, MK, and I sort of absorb for a lot of clients some of that stress. But I also understand, you know, what they're trying to protect as leaders in the organizations that we serve. And I distinctly recall a phone call that I had a couple of years ago on Thanksgiving Eve. And so think about it. Everybody's sort of going different places and they're seeing their family and they're looking forward to time off. And it was a client of ours that was under serious attack. And you know, there was material, potential material harm, but also patient safety harm when we're serving the healthcare field. And I mobilized the team, you know, my team, you know, from an incident response perspective. I don't want to get too technical, but that team worked, you know, through basically the Thanksgiving holiday. And I, you know, not only sort of led that element, but they came together as a team in a way that I was really blown away, but I was also so appreciative. And, you know, they knew on the other side of that, that they would, you know, have some time off and get to spend time with their family. But it's sort of making very quick snap decisions, you know, that made me feel like, you know, we can tackle anything as a team, as long as, you know, we have somebody that is inspiring us here. And that comes to mind, MK, is the, you know, a Thanksgiving cyber attack on a client that was really scared, and we helped them through that. There was a lot, you know, in that weekend that happened.
No.
But that team coming together was a memorable, memorable event.
How do you think about balancing in your field? And then maybe we dive a little bit more into what you guys are doing at First Health Advisory. How do you feel about the balance between technical skills and clear leadership capabilities, and how do you balance ensuring that your teams have that right balance in the leadership across the board? You know, understanding the technical challenge, but also employing and exercising good leadership principles.
Yeah, you know, when you look at the field, you know, of IT and then cyber generally, I think there is certainly a lean more towards the technical, you know, than sort of the interpersonal. qualities and charisma that you might see in other industries, in other sectors. And so you have to be able to kind of foster those people that show qualities in both, and bring them, not necessarily up, but bring them into positions where they feel most comfortable. And so there are absolutely people that don't feel comfortable in, let's say, a business development situation, in our company. But there's others that, you know, just are never going to be technical enough, MK, to get into deep network infrastructure and cyber theory and offense, defense, and all that conversation. So it's important for me to see those qualities early on and sort of foster them into those fields, because it is a very rare individual that has extreme technical capability that can translate that into sort of lay terms and interact with boards and leaders and other, you know, clients on a regular basis. And so I think it's a real challenge, especially in the field of cyber. But if you do find those special individuals, you need to, you know, really, really foster their growth from a leadership perspective.
How's the business school adage go? You get the right people on the bus, and then you got to get them into the right seats, right?
That's it. Good to great. That's one of the all-time leadership books from an organizational culture perspective that I continue to take lessons from. And I think that's a 25-year-old book.
It is. It is. Speaking of leadership authors, do you have a favorite?
Well, I have a book right in front of me here, and this is it, Jim Collins. I've got to tell you, there are books that sort of play on, the hype of the day, and you go back and you look at them, and it might be a 10-year-old book, and you go, I don't even really understand now how it's relevant to today. I keep coming back to Jim Collins and whatever he writes, and it just it feels still relevant, right. Because it was so based in the research that he did, and I still use it as a teaching tool for my team. And we talk about it at our company meetings. We talk about it at our leadership meetings, and so I'd put Jim Collins up there with anyone.
You must get approached a lot about potentially mentoring people. How do you feel about the subject of mentoring and maybe how you exercise that currently? I don't know if you spend time internally just mentoring folks on your team. Do folks external to your company seek your mentorship? How do you view the subject, and what do you do in that regard today?
Yeah, I love to give back. I've been so fortunate to be the recipient of mentorship over the course of my career. And so I think it's so important to find time and carve out time to do so. What I'm not so adamant about is calling a particular relationship a mentor sort of protege relationship. Mm-hmm. It's just a friendship and a a relationship. And if you learn from that individual, that's fantastic, because even when I'm quote mentoring somebody, I'm learning from them too. So I've always benefited from those type of relationships where there's nothing expected, in terms of, I'm going to get a deal from this person. It's just simply out of the goodness of that individual's heart and the time that they can give back to those that, ultimately are in the industry or desire, the conversation.
First Health Advisory. Talk to us a little bit about what you guys do there.
First Health Advisory is a digital health risk assurance firm. And so we advise organizations on their strategy, but we have consultants that actually can implement strategy and work on programs. In digital health, in the healthcare field, is ubiquitous. It is changing the way that care is provided. It's changing the business of healthcare through technology. And the risk assurance part of that is security and privacy and risk management. So we're looking at the digital health spectrum and reducing risk in the setting of healthcare. And we're really proud of what we've done. It's our passion, it's our craft, I think there's a lot of good things to come in this field as we help those hospitals from being attacked.
So the field that you're into has grown in significance, probably over the past 5 to 7 years. One of the top one or two verticals, I think, where there's interest by just the general public and also the technology spectrum public. The confluence of the idea of healthcare and technology, the reliance on technology, the fact that cybersecurity is now a component of all of those technological considerations. With that in mind, what are you excited about? Like, what do you see that's on the roadmap for the future, either for healthcare or like the ability for technology to impact healthcare? What things are you thinking about that maybe 5 to 10 years from now we'll just be amazed by?
Yeah, look, we're already starting to see, you know, the things that I believe will be more mature, MK, in a couple years between wearables and just devices and technology that is going to provide telemetry on your health and you know, provide alerts and give you, you know, just better indicators of how to actually take care of ourselves, which is absolutely needed. When I think of the entire ecosystem of healthcare, I think of where artificial intelligence can go. Certainly there are perils in that, but there is a lot of promise in where, you know, artificial intelligence can take us in the field of healthcare and understanding our bodies and understanding, you know, how each of us individually is unique in terms of the care we might need, the medicines that we might need. And so that's an area that I think is really something exciting to look at. And then I think of it also in terms of, well, how do you do that securely? You know, how do you do the, you know, you transact information privately to ensure that those that are receiving that care, those that are wearing these devices, those that are connecting to these devices feel that they're trusted. And so that's a big part of our ethos is, you know, let's ensure that that security and privacy is sort of baked in as these technologies advance and can absolutely change the dynamic on, you know, our lives and living better lives.
Outstanding. Leadership principles, guiding principles. Is there any one particular leadership principle that stands out that if I were to ask you, you got one thing to say to a young up and coming aspiring leader, what do you tell them?
You know, there's a couple, MK, that I think about, you know, just be honest. We've talked about that, right? Lead from the heart, be forward looking in many ways, you inspire the individuals that are there with you. And I think maybe lastly, and this sounds probably goofy, is know what you're talking about, right? You know, be competent. I'm in the field of cybersecurity and you know, the field changes every day. You can't know everything, but I'll tell you, I wake up in the morning, I'm reading, you know, or books, I'm listening to podcasts when I'm in the car. I'm constantly educating myself on the field. You need to know what you're talking about to inspire individuals and to be strategic about how you run your business.
I love it. Competent. We'll end on that note of competency and the need to stay up to speed on the changing dynamics in your profession. Carter Groom, CEO of First Health Advisory. Thanks for coming in the virtual studio for the Leadership Student Podcast. Really appreciate it.
MK, thank you so much. Great to see you.
Awesome. All right, folks, that's it for this episode of the Leadership Student Podcast. We'll see you next time.
Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSPMAG24.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Leadership Student Podcast with MK Palmore, part of the ITSP Magazine Podcast Network. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then add this show to your favorite podcast player. Subscribe to the ITSP Magazine YouTube channel and share the ITSP Magazine Podcast Network with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to connect your brand to our conversations and our audience, visit itsbmagazine.com to learn how to sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey.